This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Hello. I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yes, I'm good.
Excellent.
I'm doing well.
Good.
It's getting exciting, isn't it, out there in the console world?
It is getting very exciting, indeed.
Things are happening. We're going to be playing them next month.
Wow, it's crazy, actually, when you put it like that. Next month, it'll be next gen.
At the time of recording, or at least even at the time of release, North Americorns and select markets around the world will already have their units.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because you get to wait an additional week.
Early stuff.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Unbelievable. Well, anyway, this is a video game podcast, as you might have guessed, but I will tell you again anyway. Each and every week, we are sponsored by a prestigious, wonderful, fantastic company out there in the interweb spaces. Peter has the ad read for this week. What you got, Peter?
I do. Have you heard that, you know how Activision are constantly sort of either remastering beloved franchises or now even bringing out new installments to beloved franchises?
Mm.
You know, perhaps, I don't know, sort of mascot platformers, for example, but other things too. What they're also doing in a completely unrelated venture is diversifying into cuisine as well. So they're bringing out a load of food from back in the day. You know, food from back in the day.
Yeah, I remember food from back in the day.
They've brought out a sequel to some food from back in the day.
Oh my God! Okay.
What they've done is they've taken some like shoots, like bamboo, like shoots. They've like mashed them up, and they've served it, that puree of bamboo, on some fried hog roast with some chips and wine that has been made from a fish product. That's right. Settle in for dinner. It's mashed bamboo shoot, mashed bamboo shoot boar, fritz with trout wine.
My goodness me.
Would you like me to say that again?
Yes, please.
Mashed bamboo shoot boar, fritz with trout wine.
Fantastic. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it sounds delicious and not remotely reverse engineered in any way, shape or form. Why would you say that?
No, not at all. Shut up. Stop it. And, you know, much like, it's, you know, there are some sort of phonetic similarities to Crash Bandicoot 4. It's about time.
Oh, my God, there are.
And, which is funny.
Yeah.
But there are more similarities in that Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, took... What was it, like 21 years?
Yeah, I think
to be released.
Years, yeah.
And you saying that pun took 21 years to say.
It did, but hey, much like Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, the payoff was absolutely worth it,
was it not? I can't wait to tuck in. When's it available?
You can get your mashed bamboo shoot boar fritz with trout wine today. Oh. Last week it came out.
Amazing. Is it one of those like game Christmas tinner kind of deals where you just get it from a game shop for some reason?
It's just like that, yeah. It comes in a tin, you open it, it goes, whoa! And then...
Oh, wow.
It's really tasty. One other thing about it, though, it's not real at all.
Oh, come off it.
Trout wine? You're a lunatic.
I don't know. It could be pretty good and good for your joints.
Yeah, maybe. Right? Cod liver oil.
My goodness me. Mm. Well, no, unfortunately, that is not real. We are... As is the case every week. You really should have caught on by now. I can't believe you're so stupid that you fall for it every week. You stupid, stupid idiots.
Whoa.
Yeah, sorry. That was a bit much. We're sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as 25 cents per week, that's $1 per month, you can get access to the podcast question post that we put up and submit questions to be featured on this show. We have other tiers available where you get access to different stuff, so please consider going and checking that out.
Ben, where are we walking today?
We are walking along a trout, I think.
Okay, perfect. Like
These backgrounds are getting less and less. I think I mean fewer video game related.
They are, and we've always got to think: is there going to be a large enough image available for James to use on the internet? Because at least with like video game screenshots, they're normally going to be like full HD size, but. Is there going to be a picture of a trout that he's not going to have to stretch up to fill the screen, is the question.
Very true.
We'll find out.
Who knows? Who even knows? We've got a question here, Peter, from one of our wonderful patrons.
Yeah, it's our resident Lord of the Rings character, Ernie Arrowsmith himself. But also Duncan's Wilson asked a similar question to this. So thank you to both of those. Ernie Arrowsmith says, "Hi guys, the internet was in minor uproar, when isn't it, last week when footage of Spider-Man on PS5 was revealed due to quite a significant change to Peter Parker's face design. What are your thoughts on this? When remaking, remastering or upgrading a game, it makes sense to upgrade the character's model's realism, but is it okay for companies to make major changes to character designs?" Thank you, Ernie and Duncan, for those questions. It's a good point. I mean, so I saw the uproar about this. I find that in this specific example, it doesn't bother me that much because I think partly because there are that many other Peter Parkers out there anyway. You know, I think if it's like Batman or I don't know about James Bond because I think he still has to be based on one of the actors, but it's a character who has had lots of different faces, granted in different franchises and continuities. I know he doesn't normally change his face in a run of films or
he's
whatever.
He's not Doctor Who.
No, exactly. But I think I'm a little bit numb or just indifferent about Peter Parker having different faces. I think I've just got this kind of melded image of Peter Parker's face in my mind that's just kind of Tobey Maguire mixed with what was the guy in Amazing Spider-Man called?
Andrew Garfield the cat.
Yeah, Andrew Garfield the cat, Tom Holland, PS4 Spider-Man, they're all just kind of a mashed face in my brain. So it didn't really bother me in this example, but I think broadly speaking, it would be a crazy thing to do with like a more unique protagonist from a video game. If Last of Us Part 3 ever comes out, which I don't necessarily recommend they do, but if it did, and Ellie's face was just someone totally different for no reason, that would be a very strange thing to do. Or indeed, if they just remastered a game that's already out, that's what they've done in this case. And change the face completely without good reason. That would be a strange thing. I think it being Peter Parker, like, they kind of got away with it in my mind. But, as a general rule, it's kind of mad.
Well, sorry to disagree with you, Peter, but speaking as someone who is a massive Spider-Man fan, the game, you know, having platinumed it and done the new game plus and played it on the silly difficulties and so on. I don't care either. I just don't care. I really don't care about this at all. It's such a nothing problem.
Oh, I thought we were going to finally disagree on something. No, we normally always give the same answer.
Sadly, I feel so indifferent about this, and this is coming from someone who's played the hell out of that game. I love that game dearly. I was never, ever that fussed by Peter Parker's face. It was the first game in a series. Yeah, them changing it is going to be a bit disruptive. They haven't made that decision lightly. I don't know if I agree or sort of think they're telling the truth.
Yeah, the reasoning's very odd, isn't it?
With their reasoning, which we'll get into in a second. Mm. But generally speaking, I just don't care. Like, I really, really don't care. It's such a, as I said, such a nothing issue for me.
Yeah.
I can see why people might be a bit miffed at it. But, you know, the internet, people have been attacking people and so on. And the directors had to come out and call for just like, can you all stop being assholes, please, for God's sake? Yeah, their reasoning was that they wanted a better facial match for the face and voice capture of Yuri Lowenthal, the voice of Spider-Man. So he's remaining. It's just the face model that's changing. I understand that to an extent, but I also think that that's also maybe codswallop. Maybe more money was asked for by the original model. I don't know. There's all sorts of reasons, and you know, you can put out a load of conjecture and nonsense about why you think it may or may not have been done. But the point is, only one game in this franchise has been released, and if they're going to change the face model, it makes sense to do it now before the proper sequel. And you've got to assume that Petey Parks shows up in Miles Morales, and that would be strange if they had, you know, plans to change it up. And then he appeared as his old version in there as well. Some people are saying, quite rightly, that the screenshots of him now look younger than Miles Morales does, even though he's meant to be significantly older. But I would argue, and I've not heard anybody make this point so far, and it's such an obvious one to me. Obviously, Miles Morales is set, I don't know when, maybe at least a couple of years after the original Spider-Man came out. You have to assume that Peter Parker will also age in that time.
He will look older than he does.
He will look older because that, you know, that we're looking at two years or whatever, however much younger Peter Parker, you know, in the original game. So yeah, he's going to age.
He doesn't look younger than Miles Morales was in that game.
No.
Like, you might argue he looked... I mean, I don't even think he necessarily looks younger than he does in the upcoming Miles Morales game, you know, younger than Miles does. But certainly in the original Spider-Man game, you know, he was... Miles was like a boy in that, wasn't he?
Yes.
As far as I recall. So, yeah.
I think it's just emblematic, perhaps, of a much larger issue in that PlayStation and Sony have completely bungled this Spider-Man nonsense from the beginning. You know, the upgrade, the fact that it's the remaster is locked behind the Ultimate Edition of, you know, Miles Morales on PS5. You can still play your original PS4 version on PS5, but it won't have the upgraded Spider-Man, and it won't have the new Spider-Man. It won't have the upgraded city and faster load times and stuff like that. It's all very confusing, and it's all explainable in that this is how this works, but it's needlessly complicated. They're charging people money for things they shouldn't necessarily be charging people money for, and people are very furious, and I think they're just perhaps using this issue, which I really don't think is that much of an issue, to sort of exemplify their anger and frustration at this whole stupid situation.
Yeah, that could be right. I think, yeah, there are bigger issues beyond this pertaining to Spider-Man, and maybe it's just sort of the last straw or a reason for them to get mad, even though that their actual reasons are more numerous than that. Yeah, you could be right. But yeah, when I saw this trending, I was like, sorry, is this really a story? In fact, I could have actually pictured Spider-Man's face in my head from Peter Parker's face in my head from the first game, off the top of off the top of my head without going back to look at something. So
I didn't think he looked like a real person. I thought he just looked like a computer character. You know, Miles Morales looks like a genuine real man.
Yeah.
In especially in the PS5 Miles Morales game. And the other face model of Peter Parker doesn't really look like a real person to me. Sort of like how even though, what's his name, the most boring protagonist alive in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, Cal Kestis.
Cal Kestis, even though he's based on a real human being, he doesn't look like a real human being. He just looks like generic man.
Well, it's because you hope that no one could look that annoying in real life.
It's sad, isn't it, that someone does, and I pray for him. But
yeah,
with Peter Parker in the original Spider-Man, I never thought, ugh, rubbish face. But equally, I didn't think, this is a great face that I will miss, and I hope they never replace it. I just don't care. I don't care, really. Yeah. Just don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, me neither. Well, it's time to move on, I think, to a cutting-edge section where we talk about what we're playing.
Do we?
Don't have a name for it, though.
How about Game Time?
Game Time with Ben and Peter.
It's Game Time with Peter and Ben, Ben and Peter. Thank you so much for joining us in this brand new section that's never been done on any podcast before. This is a bit where we talk about the games we've been playing, but before we get to the games we've been playing, we are once again throwing some shapes, which we always do, actually, but we're also going to throw it over to our senior editor, Mr. James Jenkins, who's been playing the Pro Evolution Soccer 2021 season update, and he's going to tell us all about it.
He's been pezzing it up. Take it away, James.
And it's live.
That's right, I've been playing the football game. No, not that one, I've been playing PES, or to give it the full title, eFootball Pro Evolution Soccer 2021 : season update. Yeah, I'm going to call it PES from now on. So you know how every annual sports game feels like the same version year after year? Well, this one is literally that. It's the same game, with updated names, at a lower price point of £25. And you know what? That's kind of a better approach. It's something that sports titles should have been doing for years now. Basically, the football part of this football game, you know, arguably the most important part, is actually pretty good. It's a more simulation-based approach compared to FIFA, and ultimately, it's pretty rewarding. It does take a while for things to click. I actually found it infuriating at first, but I was battling against like a decade's worth of muscle memory from FIFA, but it's pretty satisfying when you get there. So PES does feel slower, but it's more methodical. It encourages better build-up play. First touches and passing have to be on point. It's just a much more realistic experience, really. And a lot of this is down to the excellent ball physics, which it sounds like such a basic thing for a football game to get right, but it is a noticeable improvement on FIFA. I mean, you won't be seeing the likes of John O'Shea pulling off fancy tricks on this one. Sorry, John. Unfortunately, everything else this comes packaged in is miles behind FIFA. The menus are infuriating, the presentation looks sparse and out of date. The commentary might be the worst thing human ears have had to suffer through. You get stuff like Mbappe! When the ball trickles out for a goal kick, very disappointing. The game modes definitely suffer from this poor imitation syndrome, and most of them just don't feel polished or fleshed out enough. Master League feels clunky, there's the Become a Legend mode where you control just one player, but it's just boring at the start. There's no attempt at like a narrative like with FIFA's Volta or Journey modes. Not that that's necessary, I mean it's a damn football game, it's not like Uncharted or The Last of Us, but it spices things up a little bit. With this you're just skipping through weeks of time without playing until eventually, West Brom finally decide to play your promising new attacking midfielder at left back. Great, cheers gaffer. My Clubs is another key one. It's an underwhelming equivalent of FIFA Ultimate Team, basically. Oh, and microtransactions are here as well. Of course they are, they're just less flashy, like everything else. Anyway, I've slagged off quite a bit there, but honestly, it's not a bad game. The bits where you're actually kicking the ball around are pretty good. If you fancy something different from FIFA, a more realistic depiction of the game, and at a decent price, as long as you don't have last year's version, then yeah, PES isn't a bad shout. Just don't expect anything too flashy. Big thanks to Konami for the code. All in all, I'd say it's 3.5 footballs out of 5.
Wow, thanks, James.
Thanks, James. Then I don't need a jacket.
I don't need a James kit. That was a little review there on the update for PES. You know, quite interesting that they're doing it as a seasonal update and not a full game.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that pans out for them. Peter, what have you been playing?
Goodness me. Well, since the previous podcast, I did play a little bit more Dreams while I was waiting for those crashes and Star Warses to come out. I can barely even remember what I played now. There used to be a Flash game called The Impossible Game, where you were a little square that was just jumping over spikes.
Right.
I think it was called The Impossible Game. It wasn't The Impossible Quiz. It was different. And I played a game very similar to that on Dreams, and I found another You Are a Ball, Get Through This Ball Assault Course game, and enjoyed it. So I played a few of those. But then, of course, it was the Peter Austin Holy Grail weekend where a new Crash Bandicoot game and a new Star Wars game came out. I've still only played like an hour of Star Wars Squadrons. I played enough so that we could give a few first impressions of it. You played more than me, so you kind of led the quip scope on that, but I wanted to at least know what we were talking about and see how it handled. And, you know, just fine. We've got further thoughts on that on the channel, so you can check that out. But I think the one difference between our opinions on that game, me and you, is that I think you said more than once in that video that you're not looking forward to going back to it, or you don't feel any pull whatsoever to pick that game up again and play anymore. Whereas, I mean, it might only be because I've only played an hour of it, but at the moment, I am kind of looking forward to finally picking that back up and putting a bit more time into it and seeing how it really feels over a longer period of time. However, the bulk of my week, and I do mean the bulk of my week, not just my gaming week, but all of the hours of my week have been spent on Crash Bandicoot 4, which I've finished. I finished a couple of days ago. I finished it on Monday or Tuesday, I think. But when I say finished, I simply mean I have got to the end and beat the final boss and seen the credits and the ending cutscene. I have not, and may never, 100% that game, or 106% that game, as is often the way with Crash games. They like to go over 100. Wow, it gets very hard if you are going for anything other than level completion, really. Trying to hit all the boxes, trying to complete levels in 3 deaths or less or fewer, trying to find the secret tape in a single life. Oh boy, there's hidden gems everywhere. There are relics. I've just only just discovered as well, there's also a kind of relic called an insanely perfect relic or something.
Oh God.
It told me about that when I finished the game. It said, go back and try and get all the insanely perfect relics. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that'll be for like ultra platinum speed time trials, because relics are for time trials in the Crash games. That's not what it is. The insanely perfect relic is for doing all of the gem based tasks in a single go. So basically completing an entire level in one life, getting all the fruit and all the boxes without dying, which is absolutely bonkers. You know, generally the best way to get those gems is bit by bit. So don't try and get all the boxes and finish the level in 3 deaths or less or fewer. Don't do those at the same time, because some of those boxes are hard to get without dying. So, you know, you're wasting your time trying to do both at once. But if you want to get those insanely perfect relics, you have to do that, seemingly. So that's going to be fun. And I'm really hoping they don't count towards the 106%, but they may well do. So I'll be spending a lot of time on that game if I want to completely finish it, which, I don't know if I do. But we'll see. One thing I think a very, very, very important thing I forgot to mention in the Quipscope, and I said it in my stream yesterday at time of recording. The game is rated something for mild swearing, like, I don't know, 8 plus or 11 plus or something. And that was revealed, obviously, well before the game came out. And I was thinking, mild swearing or mild language? I was like, this is a Crash game. There can't be any of that in there, can there? For a part of the game, you play as Dingo Dial, who is very Australian. I don't know if that means anything or if that's borderline racist. But at one point, Dingo Dial, in this Crash game, refers to some of the enemies as bastards.
Whoa,
would you believe?
Really?
Yeah. Which I think
that's
I can say
shocking.
In our podcast. But yeah, it really
took
me by surprise.
Oh yeah, we can say that. That's fine. It's just surprising to hear that in a Crash game.
Absolutely, yeah. I think he also said bugger at one point as well. Or
okay.
Little buggers. But yeah, there's one instance where he goes... says something like, get out of my diner, you bastards. And I was like, whoa, hang on. Slow down, Dingo Dial. Not Buddy. Ready for this. So, yeah, I mean, that really should have factored into the Quipscope, I think. It's a highly important before you buy detail.
Funny.
But there we go. So that's mostly what I've been playing. All that Crash and a little bit of Star Wars.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you?
I played Star Wars Squadrons for a bit, and we did a Quipscope on it, as you said. I've deleted it now.
Have you deleted it?
I just don't want to play it. Aww. I really, really don't like it. And we go into more detail in the Quipscope, so I won't, retread similar ground because I deleted it after we did the Quipscope.
Mm.
I just don't want to play it. I really, really cannot put into words how little this game is for me. And I really hoped it would be. I thought it'd be a fun Star Wars romp through an entertaining story, and it is not that at all, and that's fine if you're looking for that, but it's not what I wanted, and that's okay. So I got rid of it. Not gonna torture myself with that. I had that the weekend just gone where I said on the last podcast that I was going to be playing a lot of Call of Duty Warzone.
Yes.
And I did. It's called Armored Royale is the new mode, and it's really fun.
Oh, yeah.
So the circle is small, but it's constantly moving around the map. So you sort of have to be prepared to move with it through the fog rather than it, getting smaller and smaller.
Right.
And it's teams of four. There are 100 players. So stands to reason that there are 25 teams, right? Mathematics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And each of you has an armored car, like a truck, and it has a gun emplacement on the top. It has a little portable shop on the back, and you can upgrade the armor, upgrade the gun so it can fire more, and you can also repair it back there and add, what's it called? I can't remember what they're called, but little thingies to the front that fire sort of flares that get rid of any locked-on missiles, but they're sort of single use.
Mm-hmm.
Trophy systems, that's what they're called.
Right.
And basically you have to drive around. One of you's constantly got to be driving. One of you has constantly got to be in the gun emplacement, and then the two of you can sit in the back just because it's like a flatbed, so you can climb in the back. And you've got to drive around either avoiding or actively pursuing other people and their trucks. And as long as your truck is still alive and in the game, and you can repair your truck as well from the shop, you can pay to do it, or you can park in like garages that are dotted around and it'll slowly tick up.
Right.
As long as your truck is still alive, your team can respawn ad nauseum. You don't need to like fight in the gulag or anything to respawn. You can just come straight back in.
Okay.
Once your truck is gone, then you're all basically on one life. So if you die, you're gone, and it's up to whoever's remaining in the game to sort of sprint around completely vulnerable and exposed to try and gather together enough money to buy teammates back from a proper shop or save up and buy your car back. So there's a real tactical element to it. It's a really fun twist on Warzone and Battle Royales in general. Had a lot of fun playing it, and we won like three games. It was really good fun.
So while your truck is still alive, for want of a better word. Is there a do you gain anything for killing other like members of another team, or is it just the idea that obviously while they're dead, you're able to kind of attack the truck better? Like, do you get points for kills, or is it just like you want to get them out of the way so you can remove their ability to respawn by attacking the truck?
With Warzone in general and this game too, there's still, you know, you get XP at the end and you level up and you unlock things for your classes and stuff, and you can occasionally there are supply drops, I think they're called, or something like that, where you can run up to them and get your class from it, so you don't need to run around and pick up guns. But those are, you know, they usually drop in quite open areas and there's lots of people trying to go for it at once, so it's a risk to go for those. Yes, very much the case in this mode is if they are alive, they're a threat to you. And if you take them all out, or you take their car out and you see two of their teammates sprinting in opposite directions to try and get away from you, you kind of need to take them out, because they're going to be coming back and looking for you. And also between the two of them, they're going to be saving up to get their car back, and then your efforts were for nothing, basically.
Right, yeah.
But also, you know, when people die in battle royales, they drop all their stuff. They drop their money, they drop their armor, they drop their guns. So it is, you know, there are rewards in that sense too.
Yeah.
But it's really good fun. It's a really good fun mode. Kind of sad, again, that they always introduce these modes in new seasons and then they're there for a few weeks and then they take them away again and they go on. It's like, oh, okay. But I liked that one. I don't want to play the regular
mini
one.
Mini Royale, didn't you?
Mini Royale was great. Yeah, oh yeah, that's long gone. Yeah, it's just a much faster game. But really good fun. I enjoyed it a lot. I played the Burial at Sea DLCs for BioShock Infinite.
Oh yeah, of course. You said you were going to do that, yeah.
They're really good. Going back to Rapture is really good, and I've watched a lot of theory videos and timeline videos as well, and how it all sort of explains itself. It's all very convoluted because it deals with multiverses and stuff, but it neatly ties, sort of, as neatly as you can get, ties the events of Infinite and BioShock 1 and 2 together. In that Elizabeth's actions actively kickstart the beginning of BioShock 1, which is quite fun, you know, for fans of the original game to see those games tie together like that. And I really liked it. I went back through and got all the trophies in the first part, and then the second part, you have to finish it in 1999 mode like you do for the platinum in the full game, and I just thought, nah, I can't be bothered with that. So I just finished it, and it was good. I liked it. Liked it a lot.
Good.
One final thing. I've been watching Chernobyl, the TV show from HBO, and you'll never guess who's in it.
Mickey Rourke.
Leo!
Is Leo! He?
Yeah, Leo is in it. Brother of Joseph Fares, this is his real name, Fares, is in Chernobyl. He's in the show. I would recognise that nose and that strange accent a million miles away. I was like... That's Leo.
Whenever we do a Leo impression, it always makes me want to slip into Sly from that Worst Games Ever we did, where I don't want to kill anyone else. One guy's dead. I didn't do anything. One guy's dead. I don't want anyone else to die. Strangles someone to death.
Yeah,
stabs
just
them in
snaps
the eye.
Their neck. I didn't do anything.
I didn't do anything. Brilliant.
Leo is in it. It's weird that we say Leo, his own name in his voice. Yeah, usually it's Vincent.
Yeah,
is what he says. But Leo's in it, and I thought that was really fun. Couldn't not bring that along today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've still not tried Chernobyl, but I've heard good things. Well, good horrible things about it.
Oh, it's very compelling. If you can handle melty men and some light dog murder, then you'll be okay. But it's very gripping.
Well, I mean, I've played Last of Us Part 2. That's got heavy dog murder.
Yeah,
in
you're actively complicit in the dog murder in that game.
Yeah.
So there we go. Yeah, no, very good. Anyway, let's move on to the next question.
Yes, let's.
This is from
Stukalicious. By all means, go ahead. Please
I
do.
Will. Good day, Pen and Beta. As a massive fan of most of the Resident Evil games and The Last of Us, I was ultimately disappointed by the Resi film's portrayal of the lore and am slightly concerned about the upcoming The Last of Us series, even though Druckmann is attached. Do you have an opinion on whether adaptations of games should remain stringently loyal to source material slash lore, or are you more accepting of disregarding key elements to suit a new narrative than I guess I am? Keep up the great work and keep positive and safe.
Just stay positive about it, all right?
Yeah. Thanks, Stokalicious. If they're directly adapting the plot of a game, I just don't think it's possible to keep everything in, even with a TV show with a slightly longer runtime, obviously a much longer runtime than a movie. I have a feeling that this will be good, but I'm not sort of hitching my fandom to the quality of this TV show or even the new Resident Evil movies that they're apparently working on now.
Yeah, that's what I'm just clicking through the internet to find now is, yeah, they've just announced the first two games are going to be adapted into rebooted movies.
Nice. That's fun. But I actively view these as extensions of my enjoyment of the game rather than sort of a commentary on it. So if these films/TVs aren't very good, that'd be a shame because it'd be really good to get those. But if they are based on the games themselves, then A, you can just play the game because that's probably going to be better, and B, you sort of already know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is why subverting expectation isn't necessarily a bad thing, just like they did with the Resi 2 remake. You know, it was different, it was the same but different. And I'm welcome to that. I'm sure I'd really enjoy whatever they end up putting out. They've got a very good team behind the Last of Us TV show, and I'm sure it'll be very good, even if it's not quite the same as the game. Because if it's exactly the same as the game, then great. People who can't or aren't interested in playing the game can experience that world and narrative and story. But I've already experienced it in, I would argue, the best possible form that it could be experienced in.
Yeah, you're right. If they do, if there is a direct adaptation of game to movie or TV show, then yeah, I suppose it does. You know, you lose the surprises and things. You know, certainly in the case of The Last of Us, with that ending, you know, that game mostly, like, well, not most. I mean, it's a great game throughout, but it's really hangs on its own ending in terms of the final punch, or the thing that everyone remembers about that game is the way it ends. So if you know ahead of time what's going to happen, you'd be like, okay, yeah, well, of course that's what happens. I think it's difficult to adapt games directly anyway, from you look at something like The Last of Us or Uncharted. I think I was saying this to you the other day on Slack or something, that you know, a game that's full of gunfight sequences that are for you to engage in the way that you want, whether you sneak around a bit or just go in guns blazing, whatever, you know, you're not going to adapt those into a movie or TV show in a complete you know, like for like sense. Of course,
you've got to have the dog murder in there, though.
Yeah, you could have the dog murder for sure. Of course, there'll be moments where people are shooting each other in those films and things, but you're not going to have as many. You know, in terms of gameplay, there are things that are fun to go over again when you've got a controller in hand, and you know, you can do different kinds of shootouts in different scenes and with different things at your disposal. But watching, you know, lots and lots of scenes of just someone hiding behind a barrier firing a pistol is probably not compelling viewing. So, you know, for one thing, when adapting a game, you have to temper, you know, those sorts of things and cut out some of the detail. But also, part of me says that, yeah, on the one hand, it would be nice to kind of subvert expectations if you're going to adapt something like that. But on the other hand, I kind of think if you can't adapt something properly, either because it doesn't lend itself to becoming a movie or TV show, or you know, you've chosen to deviate from the main story, then I kind of think, why bother adapting a story about those characters and then changing it up, when what you could do instead is maybe just be inspired by the universe of a game, but do a kind of spin-off, you know? Why, for example, do a story about Joel and Ellie, but then change the ending when there's a perfectly good story there in the game that ought to be adapted? that's not to say they are going to change anything. We know we don't know what's going to happen, but you know, I think the best thing to do in terms of if a video game is going to be adapted into some sort of visual media is to be inspired by a game's universe. But I think ideally, either do maybe a prequel if there's some interesting history to be explored there, possibly a sequel, but you know, it's probably best to leave those for the games to cover themselves rather than like blow their loads early. Or, as I say, do some kind of spin-off that's, you know, a whole different set of characters, but maybe set in that world. You know, I'd be very interested, for example, in watching some other characters surviving in a Cordyceps apocalypse. I'm not saying I don't want to see a Joel and Ellie adaptation, but I would absolutely be game for a completely different set of characters. I think that could be interesting. And, you know, I think we'll have to just see how well this goes down, because I mean, in recent times, video game adaptations have been slightly better than they have been historically. You know, Detective Pikachu famously did quite well. Sonic movie, relatively good.
Miraculously did quite well.
Yeah, even Rampage, which ultimately I think people look back at and it's like, well, that's just a big cheese fest. At the time, it was the highest rated video game movie ever, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, it and Tomb Raider were tied in Rotten Tomatoes.
Exactly. So it just kind of I mean, maybe it's our opinions are changing and our grading systems are changing, but I think there is also, it's kind of evidence to say that video game adaptations into films and TV, you know, the quality of that is improving potentially. So we'll have to just see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I reckon at the end of the TV show, Joel, Ellie, and an ensemble cast of clickers are all going to do a dance number.
A big musical number, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right at the end. That'll be perfect.
Top hats and canes.
Oh, yeah. You know it. Peter, it's time to move on to something very strange.
Right. Let me just... I'm ready,
It's time for Weird News.
Weird News.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Weird news time. Welcome to Weird News. We've got some strange video game news for you. Peter, what do you have this week?
I have got a story from, would you believe, Kotaku.com, which has
been written
by someone called Luke Plunkett, it says here. Don't know
who?
Don't know if you've heard of him at all. Says on his bio, Kotaku's official triple jump weird news correspondent, but you know, I've never heard of this guy at all. Chess tournament winner banned. Says opponent was doing pee-pee in their pampers.
I'm sorry, what?
What? Like a lot of other sports this year, chess has been having a good time online, except for the very end of the chess.com Pro Chess League Championships last week, when the winning team was disqualified for, quote, unspecified fair play regulations.
Okay.
As this feature on Defector reports, and there's a link where you can click through and go and look at the Defector feature if you want to, Armenian chess grandmaster Tigran L. Petrosian, whose team, the Armenia Eagles, won the competition, was later disqualified, along with his teammates, not long after an American rival they beat in the final left spicy comments under chess.com's official recap of the event. After pointing out that the much lower-ranked Armenians had potentially used players who had been banned from chess.com earlier in the year for cheating, American Grandmaster Wesley So added, "Anyway, I think the final should have had proctoring. Lots of work were at stake, and weeks of playing through the qualifying phase." Proctoring, a word usually used in exams, is the supervision of games in chess. So he's saying, I think they should have supervised the games.
Right.
Also pointing out shenanigans with streamer Hikaru Nakamura, who we featured on Kotaku last month. Oh, interesting. Whose examination of Petrosian's moves in the final found a lot of questionable stuff. And it says, "I'm bothered by this game." That's a quote. Especially some moves that were as perfect as they could be, suggesting the Armenian was using programs to help him play. Oh, it's all going on chess.com. It's a real Jesus. Scandal. Not helping his cause was the fact that Petrosian was continually looking away from the screen during his moves. Anyway, all of that's just context for why we are really here. Petrosian's meltdown following So's allegations, in which he calls his opponent a biggest loser I ever seen in my life, before adding, "You was doing pee-pee in your pampers when I was beating players much more stronger than you."
Wow.
Not long after, chess.com made the decision to disqualify the Armenian Eagles, along with handing Petrosian a lifetime ban from the site. Somehow, this isn't the first time I've written about Petrosian on this website, says Luke Plunkett. Back in 2015, he was involved, this time as the innocent party, in an even wilder cheating scandal when his opponent, Gayoaz Nigalidze, or something, was caught sneaking off to the bathroom to check an iPod Touch hidden under a mountain of toilet paper for the optimal moves.
Wow, an iPod Touch.
An iPod Touch hidden under toilet paper, and that's where it ends. I mean, you know, there's a lot of padding at the start of that article, because really, all that Luke wanted to report, and rightly so, is that one of the players had a meltdown and said, "Pee-pee in your pampers" on Twitter. And yes, we also covered a story in 2015 about an iPod Touch under some toilet paper. But, you know, I found it a pretty weird read.
That's very strange.
Now I want to hear your weird news.
I do have weird news for you. This is from, it's from Kotaku. And this is from the deputy editor of Weird News, Ethan Gack. On Kotaku. The headline reads, "Facebook accidentally bans fake Fallout 76 militia group."
Right. Okay. Accidentally bans. Right.
The Fallout 76 role-playing group Free States Militia was temporarily banned from Facebook late last week, seemingly after getting caught up in one of the social media platform's routine moderation sweeps. And this is probably, I think, maybe the worst sentence I've ever read. Because it just doesn't make any sense, no matter how many ways I dissect it.
Okay.
"So Facebook just banned our page and banned all admins from our gaming group, the Free States Militia, Fallout 76 players who roleplay as the series' canonical appellation on anarchistic group," wrote on Twitter last Thursday.
Wow.
There's like hyphens,
there's a big comma
and apostrophes.
In there, isn't there? Yeah.
There's quotation, speech mark. It's just a real mess, Ethan. It's a bad one. "In addition to the disappearance of their Facebook page, which the group said contained 2 years' worth of pictures and fan-made lore, the group's admins also had their Facebook accounts banned, restricting access to years of personal data."
Oh, God.
"One minute here, the next minute, we're deleted," Free States Militia admin Jessica Dickey told Kotaku in a private message, a video game fan site based on an in-game faction of the same name. "It makes no sense, especially when there are real-life militia groups still up and running on Facebook."
Yeah.
The group's page ended up being restored later the following day after an outpouring of support from other Fallout 76 roleplay groups. "We apologize for removing the Fallout 76 groups in error and have since restored the group and admin accounts," a spokesperson for Facebook told Kotaku in an email. And it says, we're committed to taking action against groups tied to violence, blah, 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 blah. Facebook would not say what it was about the Free States militia group that flagged it for takedown. Among the Facebook group's rules are, be kind and courteous, don't be a douche, as well as, no hate, don't be a racist prick, don't be a homophobe, don't mess with the Free States militia.
Take them down!
Get them!
Stop those anti-homophobes and non-racists. Stop them now!
Outrageous behaviour. Mm. The group is marked as private, so there's no way to see what messages were being shared on it, but talk of killing fictional foes is obviously common in the Fallout 76 community. The Fallout 76 mix-up comes as Facebook faces criticism for failing to crack down on real hate groups using the social media platform, including the real-life militias. A page for the group called Kenosha Guard wasn't removed until the day after Kyle Rittenhouse allegedly shot two people during protests over the police killing of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Jeez.
Company CEO Mark Zuckerberg called that oversight an operational mistake at the time.
Oh, God.
So there we go. They are clearly Facebook's algorithm, doing great stuff.
Mm.
Got their priorities in order.
Yeah, shut down those Fallout groups.
Got to take down those Fallout 76 militia groups. They shouldn't be playing it. Full stop.
Why don't
it's dangerous.
They should quit those groups and go and join a real militia that we're
not going
to take down.
Yeah, why don't you go outside and join a real militia group, huh?
Yeah.
Stuck in these video games and Facebook pages.
Good
go
God.
Outside.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, pretty damn terrible. Mm. So anyway, everyone got their stuff back. And Facebook, I can guarantee, will learn nothing from this.
No, absolutely not. It was an operational error.
Yeah, it was. Okay. All right, Mark. Whatever you say.
If that is your real name. Mark Facebook.
Yes.
Time for question three.
Hmm.
This is from Aiden Fitzsimmons, or possibly Fitzsimons.
Oh, but, it's probably Fitzsimmons.
I'm going to say Fitzsimmons, yeah. Hey, lads, or lasses. Ooh. Hopefully this hasn't been asked before. When I was younger and visited my cousin's house, I used to love watching him play Zelda Ocarina of Time. I have, however, never played the game myself. I would never ask him if I could play. I was happy to just sit and watch him play. So my question is there any game that you love watching others play, but that you've never played yourself? Or you've played very minimally, perhaps? I find that in the flesh, I don't like to watch gaming that much. If I'm sitting there and someone's playing a single player game and I'm just, you know, on their sofa, I would rather they sort of let me have a go or we turn it off and play a multiplayer game. I mean, I don't mind if I sort of nip round to someone's house and they're still finishing off or whatever. Like, oh, I'll just get to the save point. But, you know, if someone's like, oh, do you want to watch me play, Uncharted, I'm like, not really, no. I'd rather play a game with you, actually. But however, I do, of course, like watching gaming stuff on YouTube. I think there's various kinds of games I would watch. I don't mind watching quote-unquote walking sims on YouTube because I feel like, although they are quite fun to play, depending on what mechanics are involved, I think you don't miss out on much just like sitting and enjoying the story and the narrative. The narration of games like that. I watched all of Everybody's Gone to the Rapture on YouTube. I think I've said that before, and loved just watching it through and enjoying it from that perspective. It was a commentary free version, so it was just it was kind of like watching a movie, a first person film or something. Mm-hmm. I also, though, I really like watching games in which people use their creativity and do so better than I could. So I think it's quite nice. I've actually recently been watching, I found a YouTube channel that was suggested to me by the YouTube algorithm someone who builds stuff in Minecraft, but they do it with no commentary. It's from like a series of fixed camera angles, and they've got all these mods added in that make it look very pretty. And they just play this kind of chill music, and it's just this very relaxing thing. I quite like watching. If there's been a new one posted, I'll watch it in the evening. And they're just building like, a log cabin or making a little field or something. It's quite relaxing to watch. But also things like SimCity or City Skylines, I should probably say, And also, I really like watching people play Dishonored really, really well. Especially if they've... There's like a mod or a cheat you can get where you get unlimited mana or whatever the resource is, you know, like the magic points. And I think that's super fun to watch people do crazy, intricate things where they're blinking all over the place and they're laying traps that pay off like 5 minutes later. They like put stuff down and then, you know, way down the line, you're like, oh, that's why they put that spike trap there or whatever. And you know, people do really clever stuff with that game or that series. So, yeah, I like to watch a whole load of things, but only on YouTube. I really don't like to watch stuff in person.
Mm.
Yeah.
In terms of Aiden actually says when he was younger and visited his cousin's house, did you used to go and watch people play games?
I mean, I would sometimes watch Peter's gamer uncle play games next door. But even then, like generally, I would go around and occasionally he'd be playing stuff on his own and I'd watch. But normally he would, if I was there, he'd turn it off and we'd play Unholy War or Hogs of War or Duke Nukem Time to Kill. We used to play quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And then later it sort of turned into Halo 1 and Halo 3. And so, yeah, like generally he would let me play if I went round. But now and then. And sometimes I would go around to a friend's house and they would only have like some single player games. So we'd have to just sort of take turns. But yeah. What about you?
I definitely used to watch, it was my cousins actually, I definitely used to watch my cousins play games. I used to go and visit my cousins every so often, and that's where I was introduced to Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah.
And I watched them play that, and it just looked incredible. And I ended up playing it in the end, years and years later. In fact, it was about, how long ago, maybe 6 years ago now? So not until I was an adult did I end up playing MGS2. But I was very, very impressed by it at the time. And I just thought, oh, this looks amazing. But I just had no idea how to play it. And actually, I think I preferred watching it to playing it. I wasn't a huge fan of MGS2.
Right.
Much preferred 3 and 1 to 2. I also used to watch them play wrestling games. Here Comes the Pain was one that they had that I used to watch and think, this looks incredible. Yeah. Wow, it's amazing. There's blood. Oh, unbelievable. And my other cousin had all the GTAs. So I used to watch him play San Andreas and Vice City and stuff. And again, that was sort of mind-blowing. You mean you have a garage where you can store your cars and then you can just have them and they're yours? And you can take any car off the street and put it in there? That's amazing.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It was mind-blowing. So I used to love watching that. Now, like you, I don't want to watch you play games. Thank you. I don't want to do that. But certainly, I also watch YouTube stuff from time to time. Usually speedruns. We're both fans of
speedruns as well, yeah.
Games Done Quick, whether that's Summer Games Done Quick or the other one. What is it just called? Games Done Quick?
Awesome Games Done Quick. Awesome ATDQ.
There we go. So those are fun, and I usually gravitate towards horror games that I'm never going to play.
Yeah.
Because I like to see them broken, and I like to sort of hear them explained as they go. And also, Soulsborne games. I like to watch those be speedrunned and just see those be completely ruined by someone who really knows what they're doing. I find that quite entertaining. I don't like to watch people play games in person anymore, but I certainly when I was growing up I did.
I've just kind of remembered that really growing up I think I was more the watchy than the watcher, because I had a couple of close friends at school. Both of them were called Matthew. I guess I was only friends with Matthews.
Yes.
And I remember both of them used to come around to my house like separate, like individually they would come around and I'd be playing games and I would like ask if they wanted to play, you know. I remember playing Tekken 1 actually, or maybe Tekken 3, and saying like, you know, we can play versus mode on this if you want, or we can play a different game. And he was content to watch me just unlock new characters. And the other Matthew, I remember being there when I got to a new level in Tombi 2, And he like ran into my brother's room and was like, Pete got to the next stage in Tombi 2. He got to the next stage. And my brother like charged in to see this new area. But yeah, just thinking about it, like people used to come around. And my mum would say to me as well, like, let Matthew have a go. And I'd be like, I've offered, but Matthew doesn't want to play. He just wants to watch me. So yeah. Different strokes, different folks, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there we are. That is a little bit of history there. It's time to move on, Peter, though.
Yes, it is.
To something very big.
Oh, it's huge.
It's time for the big discussion.
Big discussion.
It's big discussion time. It's a very big discussion. Mm. And it comes from Darren Kank, who has broken all the rules and written an essay.
Darren!
And it's very naughty, but I'm going to read it anyway. Here we go.
It's quite a good essay, I think.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Good day, gentlemen. Please forgive the mild essay, but I want to give a lot of context to the question as it relates to PC gaming, something I know especially Ben isn't super keen on. One of the main factors that draws people to a platform are the system-exclusive games which are sold. Of course, as Xbox is a Microsoft company who just so happened to make Windows, they tend to bring Xbox exclusives to PC also. Couple that with Xbox Game Pass, which also has a large collection of games available, it makes for a compelling option. Recently, Sony announced that they're looking at bringing some of their first-party exclusives to PC as well. Recent examples include Horizon Zero Dawn and Piss Mushroom Simulator 3000. I mean, Death Stranding, of course. PC has a massive back catalogue of games, arguably the biggest, as the platform changes much more slowly over time as opposed to sudden platform shifts, which the consoles have every few years. Regarding the old keyboard and mouse versus controller debate, PC lets you have both. You can even Bluetooth your favorite controller to a PC now, and it just works. Finally, the world of emulation allows many people to even play games from specific systems which aren't supported anymore and expand their experience of gaming past. So, with all of the above taken into account, would either of you reconsider your potential £750 spending on both a PS5 and an Xbox Series S, and instead purchase your own PC for the same amount? Perhaps I'm just asking all of this because I'm salty that I have a PC and a Switch, and I can't play Crash 4 on either of them. Thanks for the fantastic work, gentlemen, and I'm terribly sorry to whichever one of you reads this out. Darren.
Thanks, Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
I was disappointed when Crash 4 didn't come out on PC, because it would have been easy to stream if it was on PC. I would probably have just played it on that and still bought it for my own, for my sofa fun times downstairs. I would have had two copies, like some sort of sickeningly rich man that I am, which
that's
I'm not.
Astonishing.
But to answer the question, rather than start talking about Crash 4 again, I wouldn't spend my console money on a PC setup, but I do think if and when one finds oneself in the position of being able to have at least one console and a decent PC, I think it's an excellent investment. I don't know if I would ever have enough expendable income to buy a PS5, an Xbox Series S, and a PC, and I don't think I'd need all three of those, but, you know, I'm certainly getting a PS5. I've got one pre-ordered, and you know there are exclusives on there that I want to play. I'm tempted by the Series S as well because of the huge back catalogue, and you know the price point is good. And you know at the moment I've got a work PC and a personal PC that, you know, both of them can run games pretty well. But theoretically, if I didn't have these computers, what would I rather have? Would I rather have a PS5 and a PC to play games, or a PS5 and a Series S? I'm not sure about that, you know. We've talked in the past about the benefits of PC gaming, despite the fact that neither of us consider ourselves big PC game boys. You know, having the emulation is a huge factor for me, especially as... you know, as time goes on, it's slightly more difficult to get hold of a decent PS2 or a PS1 nowadays. I keep wanting to delve into the N64 more than I ever did as a child, because I only ever used to play at friends' houses, at Matthew's house. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, emulation's a huge factor for me. I think like new games that come out on PC, I'd still rather... maybe play them on a Series S if they're available. You know, the other thing about PCs is like the modding capabilities as well. Like, you can really people can really play with games more than they can on console, in terms of like modding, like your Elder Scrolls and your Fallouts. I know that Bethesda have added a modding system onto the console versions, but you can do a whole lot more on PC. So I don't know. I think, yeah, to answer the bottom line question, I wouldn't get a PC instead of a PS5 and a Series S necessarily, but maybe I would be tempted to get a PS5 and a PC instead of a Series S. I think ultimately that Xbox back catalog is too tempting, and of course, as I say, I've already got a very good PC, thankfully. But yeah, in a world where I didn't have the PC, I'd probably still settle for the Series S in the end. I don't know. It's difficult to imagine a world without a PC, isn't it, really? But yeah, there you go.
I've never owned a PC.
No?
Growing up, we had a family PC, and I had a terrible laptop for a long time. And then I got a MacBook, and I've still got that MacBook. I'm very fortunate at the moment because I'm using my work computer at home.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that it does. It does help. You know, it improves things. But it's I just don't want to play games on PC. I just don't want to do it. PC is by far the best place to play games for backwards compatibility and consistency.
Yeah.
But I just don't like playing games on PC. I don't like playing with keyboard and mouse, and I don't want to use a controller on a PC. I just don't like it. Price or value for money, it just doesn't factor into my decision to play games on consoles. I want to sit down with a box plugged into my TV and play that. And I'll buy a new box every decade or so. And if my old games don't play on the new box, I will keep my old box to play on. Play on them, you know, play them on. Sorry, but I don't think, honestly, even that backwards compatibility thing, I'm probably not going to go back to the old box after 6 months have passed with the new box, because I really, really think that while backwards compatibility is such a compelling argument and some people will make great use of it, I think people hype it up to be way more than it is. And this isn't me blindly defending Sony. This is me talking from my own personal experience. I'm not going to go back and play PS4 games on PS5, even though I can. I'm not going to play PS3 games on PS5 if I could. Just like I didn't play PS2 games or PS1 games on my PS3. It's nice to have the option, but personally, I'm not going to do it. It's just not something I need to do. And so that argument for me kind of goes out the window. I can see for some people why it would be good, but for me, the PC just isn't appealing in any respect. I find it very useful from a work perspective, certainly, but in my free time, I don't want to sit down at the same device I use for work. You know, even if I had a PC at home and we were still going to the office every day, you know, I wouldn't want to come home from sitting at a computer to sit at a computer. I don't want, that's not relaxing for me. I like being in a console ecosystem. And again, you know, PCs are amazing and you can do almost anything with them, but it is not appealing to me at all. I totally appreciate all the arguments in favor of it. And, you know, may a thousand blossoms bloom as far as I'm concerned. Everyone's entitled to their own gaming proclivities.
Platform proclivities, yeah.
Platform proclivities. But for me, I just want a console. That's all I want. And PlayStation is my preferred console. And there's not going to be really anything that's going to tempt me away from that on a permanent basis, ever.
Yeah. You've got your work PC, but you ain't spending any time on it
outside of work.
Yeah. I think there's as much as there are those good arguments in favor of PC, I think there are a couple of arguments against it. I think number one, personally, I know different people probably don't mind this, but personally, I much prefer curling up on the sofa to play a game with a controller in my hand in front of the telly. And I know that there are ways that you can actually play your PC games sitting on the sofa looking at your TV if you can be bothered, or if you want to get one of those Steam boxes or whatever they were called, which I think don't exist again already. I think
Steam Big Picture or something like that.
Yeah,
is also
didn't they stop making them? I think like
I have
pretty.
No idea.
I don't know, maybe that's not true, but I'm sure I heard like that they had a really short lifespan. But anyway, so you can sort that out if you want to go to the effort of it. But that kind of brings me to my other point, which is that PCs are capable of fantastic things, and in some ways they're the best way to play games by certain measures, certain yardsticks. It would be the best way to play a game. You know, graphically they can be the best, mm-hmm. And as I say, modding and backwards compatibility and so on. However, the difference between a PC and a console is it's not always strictly a case of plug in and play, is it? Which is the problem.
Yeah.
And actually, the one thing that PCs are not so good at in terms of backwards compatibility is PC game backward compatibility. I know you can get sort of emulated versions of old operating systems where theoretically your games will work. But in my experience, they're pretty difficult to set up. Maybe I'm an idiot and I'm just not very good at it. But I tried quite hard to get a Windows XP, I think it was, emulator working. And in the end, I managed it. But it wasn't as simple as a PS1 and PS2 one or Dolphin, you know. And likewise, you get a new game, and depending on how long you've had your PC, if you plug that sucker into your or download it, I guess people don't use discs anymore, but if you download it and try and install it, it's not necessarily going to work depending on your setup. Whereas if you buy a PS4 game or a PS5 game, if you plug it into your PS4 or PS5, it will work. Mm-hmm. I know you have pro versions and non-pro versions, and so that might make a difference, but it will work if it's compatible. Whereas that's one of the big downsides to PC. I think in our experience, particularly when we were at Yogscast and, you know, since then as well, when we've been at Triple Jump, we've just found that sometimes you try and get something working on a PC and it just drivers and hardware and software and don't make me do all of this stuff, thank you, please, I don't want to. It's not as straightforward as it ought to be sometimes.
I've reached the point in my life where I value my free time too much to make such a fundamental switch. We've spoken before about what it would take for us to jump to Xbox and stuff.
Yeah.
But even if we did, which is highly unlikely, even if we did, that wouldn't be fundamentally changing the game that much, would it? We'd still be sat holding a controller, sat in front of a TV. Mm. To switch to PC gaming at this point in my life would mean learning a lot of stuff. And because I didn't grow up PC gaming, I just, not only are there big gaps in my knowledge, but it's also just, it just seems quite exhausting. You know, the relative simplicity of playing on a console is that much better. And the same way that I'm sure Darren probably feels about PC is exactly the same way I feel about consoles, because it's all I've ever known. And I know that there's a world of opportunity to be had with playing games on PC, but it just doesn't appeal to me. I just don't want to do it. And and therefore, I simply won't. And you can't make me.
And the other thing you have to, well, you don't have to, this is the point I'm about to make, but the other thing that some people who are really into PC gaming would say you have to learn about and invest time and money into building your own system. You know, people say that's the way to do it. Well, I say invest money, it's actually theoretically the cheaper way to do it rather than buy a pre-built system. However, that's one thing I've never ever wanted to do. I know people say it's like actually fairly straightforward, you can follow guides and stuff to actually put the thing together, but even just comparing one SSD to another or graphics card or whatever, like none of them have as far as I'm aware, there's not a universal grading system. Like, you need a Class B video card. If they all had a universal system that I could compare one to the other, I would just be like, okay, give me the A class one or the B class one if I want to go a bit cheaper. But they've all got different names and numbers and letters and things on them and brands, and I don't know which one's better than that, which other one, and which one do I get? It's very overwhelming. The thought of building my own, even not building your own, just ordering one online and looking at the specs, it's like, it will this work? There are literally like subreddits and forums dedicated to people just posting a spec on there and saying, if I get this, will I be able to, you know, like capture and edit HD video and play Skyrim on ultra graphics? Because people, a lot of people don't know those. They just can't understand. They can't make head nor tail of the details. I can't. I would buy a pre-built system. I would never build it myself. And even then, I would have to ask someone better than me, will this work? You know, will it run what I want it to run? So, yeah, it's a bit overwhelming to me. I think the capabilities are there, but there's too much information for me to process to really get into PC gaming. And also, I worry about the lack of guaranteed plug-in and play with certain systems.
Yeah.
But,
I agree. There we go. That's our stand on it. You know, you play what you want. You do
Please
what you
do.
Want. We understand and can appreciate the arguments, but those are our reasons why we will not be switching exclusively to playing PC.
Yeah,
and indeed. I hope that makes sense. Well, Peter, how can people get in touch with us should they wish to?
We are Team Triple Jump everywhere. Literally everywhere in the world. YouTube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. That's where we stream and put out videos. When we stream on both of those channels, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Cecil Prumps, Mad Stadactyl, and Trowling Badger. Thank you, team. We've got social media, twitter.com and facebook.com, both/TeamTripleJump. Luke Eldon, looking after Facebook, as usual, doing an excellent job. We've got a Patreon, which is patreon.com/... Would you have guessed it? Team Triple Jump. Lots of rewards there, including asking questions on this podcast, early worst games ever, and unique special one-off patron merch as well, things like that. We've got a Discord, bit.ly/TeamTripleJump. That's modded by Jack and Joe. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Joe. The podcast, if you are watching on YouTube, is available at play.acast.com/s/triple jump. No team there. And the website, triplej.mup, that's triplju.mp. And you can put /shop on the end of that to get to our store. We've got a careers tab there, which at the moment, nothing there, but keep an eye on it. You never know when it's going to have a new posting. And finally, you can see all of our live stream VODs by going to triplej.mup/VODs, which will send you to our YouTube channel where we upload all of the VODs.
You can follow Peter on Twitter and Instagram at that Peter Austin. Oh, I said that weird. At that Peter Austin. And you can also follow me just on Twitter at confused_dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday and Friday. Thursday being the joint stream on YouTube and Monday and Friday being solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly. Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. It's not a Worst Games Ever week this week.
No.
The podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows one every other week. Please leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. This week, we've got a new What It Means to Me, and we have Sam Driver from Cultaholic Wrestling talking about Broken Sword. So make sure you go give that a watch, as well as the two quipscopes we mentioned earlier in the show about Crash Bandicoot 4 and Star Wars Squadrons.
Also, probably, like, the plan is that today, at time of release, Saturday, we will be putting out another ranked list.
Is it Sunday that it's going out, or Saturday?
Oh, I thought it said Saturday on the schedule, but in any case, this weekend,
yes.
The plan is to put out a ranked list. That's still pending. I need to literally, as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to have a final look through and make sure it's okay. Oh yeah, it says Sunday on the schedule actually, so my mistake. But so check that out tomorrow. Theoretically, I'm sure it'll be fine. It was nearly fine last time I saw it, so that's probably there. But I'm not promising anything.
No.
All right?
No, it'll be good though. Go and watch it if it is live, maybe. What is this week's sponsor, Peter? Just time to say goodbye.
Oh, I'm getting real peckish for some mast bamboo shoots, boar fritz with trout wine. The inflection is very difficult to do on that, because if you try and do it in the Crash Bandicoot style, the boar gets a really strong inflection.
Mashed bamboo shoots, boar,
fritz with trout wine, but it's not how you would normally say it if you were reading from a menu. So,
well, it sounds delicious.
We'll have to think on. We'll have to get the marketing team to maybe just never do anything like that ever again, because good God,
we got a lot of those meals to throw away then. We can't sell them.
No.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekends, and we will see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.